is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence. Your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at ML on WLXG. Ask questions or comments on what you'd like Matthew to talk about on the show. Today's show is sponsored by French Lick Resort, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Play Golf Lexington, and by Edwin Watts Golf. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Good morning. Backspin Golf, right here at the first tee at the Square Country Club for our 8:03 tee time. Hi, Mikey. I tell a little secret. Hi, Chris Mascaro. This show, this episode, as I like to call them, will be our final episode for a couple of months. We're going to take a little time off. Sean and I are exhausted. I mean, people don't get how hard it is to do. I can't say this with a straight face. We are going to take a couple months off, and we'll be back in January as we do every season. But it's a great way to top off this past season. Today's guests, of course, Perry French. Perry French. I'll thank people in the close, but Perry, I can't thank you enough, really, for being along every single episode for 4 years. I could not do this without you. You're a huge blessing to me, Perry French. Perry French, Cleveland Golf, Strix on Golf. And then two heavy hitters. First, Jeff Babineau, the senior golf writer at Golf Week, will join me. He just got back from Paris. Yeah, how about that, Sean? Covering the one-year-out event they're holding for the Ryder Cup, which is a year from now. Jeff just got back. We'll talk to him about that and some other things. And then the brilliant Anne Liguori, historic Anne Liguori, groundbreaking Anne Liguori, will join us, and we'll talk about her trip to South Africa that she took. All that coming up right here on Backspin Golf on ESPN Sports Radio 1300.
Now, joining Matthew on Backspin Golf is Perry French, PGA professional and territory manager of Strixon Cleveland Golf.
Hey, 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 Perry French, Perry French. Hey, I'm running out of it. It's been 4 years. I'm running out of it.
I know. Your entries are, you know, you have to start.
How about this? Perry French joins us now, Cleveland Golf. That doesn't feel right to me. No, it doesn't. Hey, how you doing?
Oh, man, just awesome. Lots of good things happening. It's been a busy fall. Between the great weather, which has been awesome for the golf courses, and all the golfers getting a chance to really enjoy an Indian summer, which has been
fantastic.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
I hope it lasts through February.
Is that all good? I'll go with that.
I'm good for 1 month of not playing, and then we get right back.
Maybe we'll have December 24th through January
6th. We can move to San Diego, too, and play every day if we want.
Absolutely. But it's been fun, and we've had a lot of good things happen with the product line.
The launchers. And I finally get them. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Excited is not the word.
Right.
But we're going to focus a little bit. We mentioned this last week. Mm-hmm. The Wedge Week on the Golf Channel.
Right.
With Dave Peltz.
Right.
And Martin Hall and, mm-hmm. and Blair O'Neill and a couple other people. So today, I want to focus on this wedge.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to talk a lot, but Dave Peltz, Revolution Golf is his golf school.
Yeah.
It's his theory on teaching the short game, and you know short game and me. That's what we always talk about, the importance of it in our shows and players trying to look at that. Well, Dave it's what he does. He designs product in his teachings and how applying it, and CBX Wedge is delivering. To his students and to him, he sees the benefit at probably a pace that we haven't seen, where players are really going to find this as a club that even the better players, if you're a pretty good wedge player, put this wedge in your bag and be a really good wedge player.
Yeah.
I don't mean having to do this dynamic technique, because a lot of people have a little technique flaws that cause the ball to be a little hit towards the toe, mm-hmm. if you're one of those players, this is the wedge for you. If you're one of those players who hits the wedge a little thin or has the ball climb up the club face and doesn't fly quite as far as you'd like it to do.
I'm all those things.
This wedge is going to help deliver, and we've seen it. I mentioned that, but 25% less disbursement. And you're getting a yardage that's within 2 or 3% of what you would hit a full shot perfectly. See. So you when you miss hit it, you don't lose 7 to 8%. That's where people get in trouble. You have a 100-yard wedge shot and you miss hit it a quarter inch off center and it goes 93 yards.
Or less,
and it's front bunker and
right.
Yeah, and we all know if you hit a not a solid shot and there's a little bit of wind in your face, it really gets eaten up. So,
right.
So that's where we found this club to really benefit. So Dave goes through a story. This is a great I'm giving him all the credit because I thought it was a good way for people to think about their game. The average player shoots 90. I think he's being generous, but I'll go with 90, okay?
Nobody knows this. I get upset if I shoot 88. If people keep their true scores,
yeah.
I'm not talking about
right.
certain people.
Sure, sure.
But true scores, 10%. Shoot break 100.
Correct.
10%.
And that hasn't changed. That's what amazing. It hasn't right. changed in 30 years. It's the average handicap is like 25 for a man and
right.
36 for a woman. It's breaking 100 is a if you truly do, that's a good score. A lot of things have to happen. So he takes 90 as the score.
Right.
Well, so we start with what's the most used club in the bag? The putter.
Yeah.
Right? Most players who shoot 90 have about 40 putts. That's an awful lot of putts, but if you truly think about it, that's a lot of putts. But a lot of people don't make very many putts. He uses 40. I thought that was high. I was going to say 36. But if you're putting, I've told you this before, if you break 30 or less is a great putting day.
Absolutely.
You know, you've putted well, made some good chip shots, and made some putts. But he uses 40 as his number. So
okay.
Your one putter is costing almost how many? It's almost 45% of your shots.
Right.
The next clubs most used are your wedges. 21 shots of those
per
round are going to come with wedges. Pitching wedge, gap wedge, sand wedge, lob wedge, et cetera,
right.
of those. Okay, so that accumulates to 62.5% of all your shots are played with a putter and a wedge. People, figure it out. Okay.
Hello, people.
So now we're there. Now we go to the next club in the bag, and the most used club next to that is the driver.
Right.
Typically 14 holes.
Times.
Yeah, 14 times. Plus your few metal woods and hybrids, right. 21 shots come from that.
Huh. So
okay. Let
me get this straight. I can't do the math because I'm not smart. But with three clubs, pretty much.
40, 21, and 21.
61, 82 shots
yeah.
out of 100, he's
right.
saying. Or 90, he's
out of
saying.
90.
Or with those three
right.
clubs.
And this is a pretty good schematic.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now what's left? Your irons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eight shots.
And you have seven irons typically, four through pitch is your.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. If 14 greens, you might hit 14 par fours. Or 14 tee shots, you might hit half of them are par fours. You're going to hit seven iron shots.
Right.
Maybe not because it's too long. You hit a hybrid.
Yeah.
That's a metal. You know, par fives. We talk about this, and we've talked about this
driver
all years
with
the tour players. Right. Why do they score so well? When there's par fives and they get a wedge in their hand, it's birdie time.
Right.
That is where you have to look at the scoring of your game, the way you're going to save strokes. And that means if you miss hit a tee shot and you put it back in the fairway and leave yourself 100 yards to the green, and you can wedge it on the green, and at worst case, two putt, you're going to make a bogey. But when you're not able to hit the green with a wedge from 100 yards or a 9-iron or a gap wedge, and you can't get it up and down ever, you're not going to score well. But the reason you're going to break 85 or 95 or 80 for the first time is because you do get it up and down from 50, 70, 80 yards once or twice in that round.
Right.
You do get it up and down 4 out of 5 times from around the green, which is a 8 to 10
right.
foot.
And you eliminate three putts. Two or three times,
right.
have a
so,
two-putt instead.
So the key thing that I take away is, look, you need to make sure, work on your putting, okay? But also, it's easier to putt from 10 feet than it is 40 feet.
Yeah.
Have wedges that help you hit the ball closer. Work on your short game to help do that. Yes, your long game is important because you do need to get off the tee.
Right.
You know, but if you we just said 81 shots of 90 come with a driver, wedges, and a putter.
Yeah.
Now, if I give you a good putting round and put you to 30, well, those 10 shots there, okay, hopefully
yeah.
if you have 30 putts, you're not shooting 90.
Right.
But then you're making some extra shots in there with your irons, and that's maybe not a good thing because
mm-hmm.
you're hitting, you know, you're not controlling your shots that way. So players need to think about their entire game. And I think the one thing that most players don't look at is – when they talk about what they do well, what's your most favorite club in your bag, Matthew? What's the club you are always confident with? I know there's one.
Three hybrid right now.
Three hybrid. Okay, so when that yardage comes out, it's like,
grab
and go. What you want to get yourself to is to where that there's a yardage, or can I get myself to a 100 yards or 120 yards or 80 yards so that when you're in trouble, your bailout plan is to get to that yardage and you're not thinking I got to hit a hero shot.
Right.
So there's water in front of the green and you've missed your shot in the rough and it's a bad lie. Rather than trying to hit a hybrid from 180 yards over the water, lay out to 80 yards, wedge it on, knock it in two out of four times, and make bogey at worst. And your round's not ruined.
Right.
These are round ruiners that happen all day long. The round ruiners are the ones where you just hit two or three shots and it leads to doubles and triples and even worse. And if you had to score it out.
Yeah.
And that's why
when we come back in January, we're going to have a segment every week, Perry's Round Ruiners.
It's not a fun picture, but it happens to all of us. There's a shot that you're not comfortable with
I laugh at myself.
I do too. And you go, if I'd have just pulled that shot off. I was playing really well until, those are the dialogues that you hear people talk about. And it's like, okay, well, let's go back to that shot. It's 190 yards over water. The wind was in your face, and you normally would hit a hybrid. So he said, I'm going to hit 5-wood because I got the wind in my face. But it's a tough shot because the penalty is severe, water in front of the green, and you miss it, and it goes in the water.
Right.
Okay, so now you got a drop. So 2 in the water, 3 back, 4 on the green, and 2 putts for 6.
Right.
Okay. So now, if you're good from your wedge game, so the drop back is only going to be about 30 yards from the green that the water's in front.
Right.
Typically, maybe more. But up and down from there, you get to make a 5. If you get up and down, that's a 5.
Right.
So it didn't ruin your round. But if you talk about playing the hole and say, okay, I can't get there with a 190-yard shot today.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and hit 7 iron to 80 yards, hit my 80-yard shot on the green, and maybe make that putt
for
15-footer
par.
Right. Worst case scenario, make a bogey.
Right.
Bogey on a par 4 with water in front of the green,
not
into the wind. Not a round ruiner. It's not a round. You can recover from a bogey.
Absolutely.
And then
every round almost that I play.
And what about this place? Why would a player who walks up to the water to take their drop leave themselves, because under the rules of golf,
you can go as far back as you want,
keeping that point between you and the flag. Find that yardage. Take this winter to be really good at 50 yards or 40 yards. But don't drop yourself to 30 yards with a shot you're really uncomfortable with.
Right,
because
then
you're bringing the water back into play, and you dump in the water, and what do we have?
You have a round ruiner, and maybe one so severe that you get in the cart and go
back
home.
What if you hit that chip shot to 30 feet and 3-putt? It's a double round ruiner. I mean, you're just compounding the wishes. So I say this jokingly because we've all been there.
Right.
Mentally, we get frustrated. We maybe get an aggressive bone in our body to try a shot we shouldn't. Nothing wrong with trying the shot when you're hitting it well and you feel like you can pull
the shot.
It happened
the last time I played. It happens almost every round.
Mm-hmm.
I lipped out an 8-foot birdie putt to shoot 40 on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to 10. We had to wait a little while. I got to 10, fairly easy hole out at Kearney out there, did some stupid stuff, tried a hero shot, made triple on 10 on a short par 4. And talk about a round ruiner. Right away in my head, I'm like, there it goes.
Yeah.
There goes my whole round.
It's the thing that we all have to avoid.
The
pros constantly avoid that.
All right.
So it's been a great year.
Yeah. It has been.
Can't believe it's over.
I know. But I'll see you soon.
All right. We're going to work on our golf game.
Love
avoid
you.
The round runners.
Love you, man.
All right,
see
man.
You.
See you.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their 5 public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play golf, Lexington.
I don't know. If he knows this, the great Jeff Babineau from Golf Week, golfweek.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Golf Week Babs, that's B-A-B-Z. I don't know if he realizes this, but it's our last show of the season for a couple months, and we'll be back in January as we take a little golf vacation here. And so I was thinking, who do I want to kind of wrap this up? And Babs came right into my head. And then I see, well, let's say hi to him. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
And then I see a few days ago, oh, wait, he's in Paris. That's right. And not Paris, Kentucky, Paris, France, because they get this big Ryder Cup deal there, and he's there watching guys hit balls off the Eiffel Tower and stuff. How cool was that trip?
Yeah, that was up there on the cool scale. I felt really lucky to be there, you know, 1 year out from the Ryder Cup. So it was really neat. We got a chance to see the Ryder Cup venue, you know, Le Golf National.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Paris, spent a little time in Paris, in Versailles. They had a nice dinner at the Palace of Versailles. It was incredible. And it was just a really neat way to kick off, you know, the whole run-up to what's going to be another great Ryder Cup.
And it's a year out, but, you know, already, I mean, yeah, we had the President's Cup. Yeah, great. I mean, I think that's how all of us feel now about that event. But the Ryder Cup obviously is something different, and I think our success, correct me if I'm wrong, but our success in the President's Cup somehow affects, it's like the Ryder Cup, those guys say, yeah, well, this ain't the President's Cup. We're going to kick your butts. And I think that makes it more exciting.
Oh, I do too. You know, I mean, Europe is a tough foe. They've been on this great run. You know, we won the last one, of course, at Hazeltine, but people forget we lost six of the previous seven.
Right.
And Europe still looks at the all-time numbers, which the U.S. has a big edge from winning, you know, in the 50s and 60s mm-hmm. and 70s, and thinks they're the underdog. They still have a big gap to make up. So I love the fact that both teams kind of see themselves a little bit, they all embrace that underdog role. We want to think right now the U.S. is a big juggernaut with all the success these young kids are having, which is terrific to see. But I do think on European soil, they're still kind of the underdog. We haven't won over there in 25 years. You know, Davis Love made a putt in 93 to win at the Belfry.
Wow.
And we haven't won on European soil since. So it's going to be a tall, tall mountain to climb. And Jim Furyk has an interesting job ahead of him at the helm of the U.S. team.
Now, tell us about that whole, I referenced it, but the whole Eiffel Tower thing. Again, we talk about Twitter, and one of the great things about Twitter, when something happens, you can immediately see a photo from many years ago where Arnold Palmer hit a golf ball off the platform at the top of the Eiffel Tower. First of all, where do they hit those balls? Are they like landing, you know, near the Champs-Élysées or something? Where do those balls go?
Well, I guess Arnold hit some real golf balls, so I don't know if anyone's beret got knocked around that day. But these were kind of the near golf balls, the softer balls. They kind of cleared an area. It was fantastic. These guys hit from Thomas Bjorn and Jim Furyk, who will be the captains next year, hit from a platform, I guess about the second story maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Arnold hit a little higher up even.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who, I mean, I've been around Orlando a long time, seen a ton of Arnold Palmer pictures. I had never seen ones of him hitting a ball off the Eiffel Tower.
I don't think any of us had.
No, it was amazing. So it was a really cool shot. I put it up on Twitter myself.
Yep.
And really cool shot. You know, it had been 41 years, and no one else had done it. So I think it was just that they had to jump through a lot of hoops to get that done again. And, you know, they did it as safely as they could. But, you know, there were workers out there so high up removing this fencing so they could hit balls out into the, you know, out into the city. It was amazing. So it was a series of really cool events over there. And it reminds you, you know, when you bring a big tournament like that into one of the biggest cities of the world, it can be kind of a magical pairing. So I think the, you know, the Ryder Cup in Paris is going to be really interesting.
It'll be fantastic. And I know you'll be over there covering that now. But when we said hello before we went on the air, you made reference to our Barbasol event that's coming in July. It's July, yeah, in July of this year. And we have this event coming, which is really cool. It's the first time since 59 that a regular PGA Tour event is going to be coming here to Lexington, even though it is the same week as the Open Championship or the British Open, as some people around here call it. It's still a really big deal. And this press conference was very, very cool. So it's great for Lexington.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, you're going to get some young up-and-coming players who are going to go on to play in the Open Championship. And, you know, for years, when I used to go to the Puerto Rico Open opposite Doral.
Yeah.
You know, all the big stars were at Doral, but I got to see those guys play a bunch. I kind of enjoyed going over to Puerto Rico and seeing some other stories. You know, these guys, some are in their late 40s trying to keep a card and keep a living. Some are young kids. So, you know, we saw a series of runner ups in Puerto Rico, like Jason Day and Jordan Spieth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his first year in 13, that really got him going, finishing second there. So, you're going to have guys there that are going to use that tournament as a big stepping stone to bigger things. And I think it's fun to see those kids when they're up and coming.
And it's not only, you know, as you mentioned, it can be about keeping a card. And there are guys that don't qualify for one reason or another to play in the Open Championship. Last year at Barbasol in Alabama this past season, Davis Love played in that tournament, Retief Goosen, Angel Cabrera. I think there were nine guys that had won a major that played in that tournament. So it'll be pretty cool for us. And I'm angling to get the starter's job on the first tee.
That'd be really good.
Yeah, that'd be really good. And maybe you can help me with different accents and stuff.
With all the pronunciation.
Yeah, with all that stuff. And before you go to Paris. And
Xander Schauffele.
Yes, that one in particular. See, it's funny. You read my mind. Xander, I'm okay with. The rest of it, not so much. All right, just to wrap up, since this is our final backspin for this season, it's been a great year. For the first time in a long time, the top three ranked players in the world are Americans. Hasn't happened for a while. And we're coming into, of course, this season has started already. But just quick thoughts on the wrap-up to last season's PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was an amazing season. I mean, I think, you know, Justin Thomas was the story of the season, him breaking through. You know, we knew he was a kid that was kind of destined to big things, but I think he won maybe once in his first 79 or 80 tour starts, and all of a sudden, now he's winning all the time. You know, he's won six times since this time last year, since teeing it up in Malaysia. So I think he was certainly the story, but the ripple effect around him is just the emergence of all these kids in their 20s that are accomplishing such great things so early. You know, there's no fear. They're just uber confident. I think Spieth has led the way. I think Jordan Spieth kind of set the bar, and these kids looked at him, and they've competed alongside of him in junior and college golf, and they think, hey, I got to get going too. I can do this. And as a result, we're seeing some amazing things from young kids, and it just has a huge ripple effect right across golf. I mean, we're going to see a changing of the guard on the Ryder Cup team, you know, younger guys. And we're going to see a lot of younger guys right behind them trying to follow suit. So, you know, I need to sit down and write a year-ender for Golf Week in the magazine. And to me, that's the theme, is the just the great play and the emergence of these 20-somethings.
And, you know, the interesting thing, and I've had this discussion with a few other people, is projecting ahead, because they're winning at such a young age and so much money on top of it, it'll be interesting to see how their careers play out. And the main theme we keep coming up with is it'll depend on how important history is to these guys, because they're going to get to be, you know, 32, and they're going to have more money than they could spend in their life, and they'll still be young. So I think the history part of it is going to be crucial.
I remember having the debate about 10 years or so ago, thinking that this would be the first wave of guys who were 40 then getting, you know, 10 years from now, why would you need to play the Champions Tour? So,
yeah.
You know, why, how many toys and how many boats does Davis Love need to have in his yard?
Yep.
But I think, you know, competition drives them. It's history, as you say, that drives them to stay at a high level. But they also are driven by the competition. They've done it their whole lives. You know, a lot of them get to 50. They've worked hard. They don't want to grind like they've grinded their whole life. But, you know, they still want to compete. So know, Davis Love wants to get out there and chase it around on the PGA Tour champions, and Steve Stricker does, and you know, guys behind him will as well. So, you know, it will be interesting. I mean, you could step away, and you're going to have enough to step away if you're Ricky Fowler or Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas when you're 40 years old and have enough money for, you know, your grandchildren's lifetime. Mm-hmm. But what fuels you to get there, I think, is the competition. So
yeah.
I don't think that's that easy to remove out of the equation. And I think that you know, health allowing them to do so, that's what they're going to continue to do.
All right. Do you, now that you're back from Paris and your travels, do you get to relax a little? I know the golf season's still going on, but, you know, you've worked awfully hard this season, Jeff.
I reached a different status in Delta than I ever had in my life. I traveled a bunch. This is a nice time of season for us. It's kind of quiet.
Yeah.
I like, you know, players are playing, which is fine. They get a good jump on the season. You know, like a Pat Perez already is well on his way to the Tour Championship next year by winning and finishing fifth already. So, yeah, but for us, though, it's a little bit of time to catch our breath, kind of get organized for next year and you know, another big year, because golf doesn't slow down a whole lot.
Yep.
So we kind of keep going.
Well, you're the greatest, and I thank you so much again for wrapping up this year with me. And I'll talk to you, and then once January comes, we'll be back at it here, and you'll be hearing from me again, pal.
Well, it's an honor to be on your season ender.
Okay.
Tell you what.
Thanks, Babs.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by French Lick Resort. Visit them online at FrenchLick.com.
All right, so the final episode of Backspin for the season, we'll just take a couple months off, as I said. And I figured, okay, let's get some really heavy hitters. So Babs, Jeff Babineau, Golf Week, and for the final guest, right, Sean? This will be the last segment of the show. Who better than Anne Liguori, who I say this every time she joins me, there is not enough time in an hour show to introduce her properly with everything that she's done and continues to do. All right, the original WFAN 660, WFAN in New York host, says here, golf tennis correspondent, WFAN and CBS Sports Radio, host owner of Breakthrough Sports Interview Series, which is the understatement of all time, author, charity, fundraiser. There are 80 other terms that could go on under there. Producer, bon vivant is a good one. Hi, Ann.
I'll have to put that one in there. I like it.
Yeah, bon vivant
is
good.
I just like the way you say it. Bon vivant.
Yeah, well, maybe we could do an audio bio for your Twitter account, and I'll just...
That would be good.
I'll do those kind with all different accents.
What a delight to be on your show. I hope it's not the last show.
No. Just till January, because even though the golf season for 2018 has already begun, we take a couple months break just to recharge, and then I'll be back in January. I'll tell you something, Ann. Following you on Twitter and your Facebook page, and we just talked for a minute, and there are a couple of serious topics I want to get to with you, but just seeing the places you've been, we just talked briefly before we went on the air. You've had some amazing experience every year you have, but this year, as you put it, some kind of life-changing things. Tell us about the one we just talked about, because that's really
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Well, you know, obviously I cover all the major golf championships and throw in the U.S. Open tennis. But in between all these tournaments that I cover, and some PGA and LPGA Tour events, I try to sneak in as many golf trips as I can, right? So in May, my guy and I went to South Africa for 15 days. And, you know, I never had been on a safari before. And that is a life-changing experience. The golf courses in South Africa are absolutely stunning. And the group we went on this tour with is an organization called Pro Golf Africa Safaris. So So they're very tied into golf.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only did we play seven golf courses, we went on five safaris, and we went to a couple wineries. Ernie Els has a beautiful winery in South Africa, and a great restaurant, too. And you know, the rand is so great compared to the dollar. You can go down there. Nine of us had a full-course meal at Big Easy,
yeah.
Ernie's gourmet restaurant.
Yeah.
A lot of wine, and it was $35 a person.
Get out of here.
Yeah, it's just very reasonable. Once you get there, it's just very reasonable,
yeah.
And the price of the tours are very reasonable. And the golf, you know, we played this course called Pinnacle Point. Every hole has a view of the ocean.
Ugh.
Just breathtaking scenery.
Ugh.
And, of course, Gary Player has designed many courses in South Africa. And one of his top courses where they have an event every year is Leopard Creek. And so you'll get a kick out of this story. So we're in Kruger National Park where the safaris are, you know, seeing the big five and all these incredible wild animals, right? You get so close, it's just thrilling.
Yeah.
We're driving out of Kruger National Park for our tea time in Leopard Creek because it borders Kruger. There is this gigantic male elephant who just all of a sudden decides he wants to go into the road. And he's 25 yards in front of our van. Well, you learn that you cannot anger an elephant, particularly a male elephant during mating season, right?
Not if you want to live, you can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've seen enough video to know that you can't. So our driver was smart enough to stop. So we're waiting patiently. 10 minutes goes by, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. The elephant doesn't budge. So I decide to turn it into a fun situation. I take a picture of this elephant. I tweeted to none other than Gary Player. And I said to Gary on Twitter, we'll be a little late for our tea time at Leopard Creek because of traffic congestion in Kruger National Park. Well, do you know, Matthew, he tweets me back. The guy's 81 years old and he handles his own social media.
He is. And uses it all the time. I mean, he's amazing.
It's amazing.
What a great story.
I had him on my radio show a couple weeks ago, and there's no truth to the rumor that he was doing sit-ups while he was on the air with me.
Yeah, but that wouldn't have been surprising either. I mean, the guy is, well, you know, all of us, Gary Player is an icon to all of us. So
he's
how
just
cool.
Incredible.
What a great story.
And so I was thrilled to play a lot of his courses. We went
yeah.
to Fan Court, and of course, he designed the Lynx course there where they had the President's Cup years ago that resulted in the tie. Remember Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus were the captains of those teams.
Right.
And he was just so thrilled. He said, I'm so proud of you, Anne, that you're visiting all the best that South Africa has to offer.
Oh,
it was a lot of fun. And then the rep from Pro Golf Africa Safaris comes to town to New York, never been to New York before. And he gets to experience some of our courses out here on Long Island. And the first day, I take him to Glen Oaks. The second day, I take him to Sabonic.
Yeah.
The third day, we go to Friar's Head, then
yeah.
Shinnecock, then Maidstone, then Bayonne. So I think he had a pretty good taste of what Long Island and Bayonne, of course, and New Jersey has to offer. And then he went up to Westchester, New Jersey. So
you know,
it was a good week for him. And he brought a bottle of Ernie Els's wine. They only made 100 bottles of this special collection to represent the 100 majors that Ernie Els has played in.
Yes.
And we auctioned it off at a charity at Glen Oaks last Monday, and it got a couple of $1,000s.
Wow.
For the charity. So
you know, you're amazing, Annie. You really are amazing.
You're sweet.
I
try to do my best.
Yeah, well, you've done more than your best for, is that possible, Sean? More than your best? I don't know. You know what I'm talking about.
Better.
All right. We're talking with Anne Liguori. Here's the first thing I want to talk to you about, and you mentioned it in a text to me, but it was my first question for you. Over the past week, I'm not sure what day it was. It might have been Monday. We had something that happened in the world of golf in Massachusetts that has gotten a lot of, there's a very big discussion going on about it, and you're the perfect person
to talk to, as well as Jeff Babineaux, who's also on the show, because he's pretty upset about all of this, too. I want you to explain to our listeners what happened with this girl that played in a tournament for a boys' team and won tournament and was denied the trophy. Can you, in a couple minutes, just explain what this is about?
Well, apparently her name's Emily Nash, a Massachusetts high school girl. She beat the field on the boys, in this boys' team in the tournament. It was a Division III boys' golf tournament.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a girls' team, so she played on the boys' team. And she wins by four. She's a 37 and a 38 from the same tees. So she's, you know, she's allowed to play, thank goodness. I'm glad they didn't ban her from playing on the boys' team. And the tournament director said that the tournament rules said she couldn't win the trophy or a berth to move on into the state tournament.
Yeah.
To qualify her, apparently, for the state tournament. And the tournament director, a guy named Kevin Reardon, says, in quotes, "We don't make the rules, we just enforce them."
Yeah, I love that line.
Now, give me a break.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and he apparently, in the article I read, said he would buy her a trophy.
Ugh.
And the kid, here's the best part of it. The kid who actually came in second, who won the trophy, offered it to
Emily. Yeah.
And she, you know, said, no, thank you. But at least the kid had some sense. It just seems like the adults who are running these tournaments have no sense at all. I mean, it's just common sense that the winner gets the trophy regardless of gender and regardless of some archaic ruling, you know, and all these, a lot of rules in golf, as you know, are are archaic. And, you know, it's just, it's not current with the times. It's 2017, for goodness sake.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing about this, and I read a lot of the comments because Jeff has been discussing this on Twitter a lot. I read a lot of the comments, and you have a lot of people who say, hey, you know, it's wrong, but that's the rule, and you have to follow the rules. Golf is the one sport where if it doesn't, your gender is not important. The rule is that if there is no girls' team for you to play on, you can play on the boys' team. And as long as you're playing from the same tees, it's not like she had to move up to the forward tees. She played the same tees and did what she did. There is absolutely no reason for her not to get this trophy.
Absolutely.
It's absurd.
So, like, over-the-top, chauvinistic, and sexist. When I was in high school, we did not have a girls' tennis team. Mm-hmm. And that was my sport when I was growing up. And so I played on the boys' team for 4 years. And my senior year, I played number one on the boys' team. And, you know, I was the only girl in the whole conference. And, you know, when we got to the regional tournaments, conference tournaments, you know, it was interesting to see the reaction from, you know, my opponents when I beat them.
Yeah.
you know, but still, I mean, I did get the trophies. They didn't, and this was back in, what, the 70s, you know? So even back then, I'm surprised that this school does not have a girls' team. Maybe, it's, you know, I mean, my school didn't have a golf team for years, for girls or boys. And then we didn't have a tennis team for a number of years until after I graduated. So, but yeah, I'm just so surprised, A, that this happened. I mean, it just seems like we haven't made any progress whatsoever in terms of equality and in terms of just common sense.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll go back to it. This goes for, obviously, a lot of things going on in the world today. But in this sport in particular, because it's just you, you're not doing something with a team. This is just you. And if you're competing in the same situation as the males are, it shouldn't even be a question. And hopefully this rule now, because so many people are so outraged by this, will change. But yet it's not going to help with her. I hope she goes on to a great career in golf. I really
absolutely
do.
And, you know, Kevin Reardon, I don't know him at all.
Yeah.
He might be the nicest guy on the planet.
Right.
Thinking, you know, we're just enforcing, you know, the rules. But, boy, this guy's going to be under fire for a long time.
Yeah, he is. And good. Because, as I said, that line, we don't make the rules, we just enforce them, you know, that doesn't do it for me. I'm sorry.
That doesn't cut it. That's why there is so much inequality in the world today because people are living by archaic rules and archaic philosophy.
I would agree with that. All right. In the couple minutes we have left, you do a tremendous amount of charity work. I have told you that I will be at your tournament this summer. I'm coming.
Oh, I'm so delighted.
Okay. Now, we only have a couple minutes left, but you just spoke to a very large group. Tell us in a couple of minutes about that.
Well, right. This past week, I spoke to the Women's Metropolitan Golf Association. I was their keynote speaker, 250 women in the New York metropolitan area, and it was just a delight. Like-minded women, they're career women, they find time to play golf and to compete in tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their handicaps range all over the place. There's an A ability, there's a B ability, and
yeah.
they have tournaments for all these different ability levels. And then they do a lot of events for junior girls as well. So it really does promote golf and competition amongst girls and women. And, you know, I was just thrilled that they asked me to be their guest speaker, and I sold out all my books. They got a standing ovation.
Yay.
It was just really kind of like a reaffirmation that, you know, my career, the ups and downs of, you know, my professional life and personal life, you know, people kind of appreciate, you know, what we in, as women in sports broadcasting have been through and, you know, the pioneers that we've been breaking down barriers and really creating our own opportunities because the opportunities did not exist when we were first starting out in the 80s a lot for
yeah.
women in sports broadcasting. So it was a lovely day. And then, I'm psyched about my golf event, June 4 at Atlantic, to raise money for cancer research,
mm-hmm.
the 20th annual Anne LaGuardia Foundation Charity Golf Classic. Mm. And even more excited that you're going to be there, Matthew.
I will be there. And again, as always, I can't thank you enough. And you know you are one of my absolute favorite people on earth. And I'll talk to you real soon.
The same goes to you for
okay.
me, my dear.
Thanks.
You're the best.
I'll talk to you soon. Well, until January, that'll do it for this season of Backspin Golf. I want to say a couple things. I might tear up, so. Sean, you got a tissue? I want to say first, thank you to today's guests, of course. Jeff Babineau and Anne LaGuardia. There is no way that I could end the show with two people that I admire and respect more than those two. So I really thank them. We're only going off for a couple months. I'm not going to Vietnam, as I like to say, you know, back in the old days. Anyway, thanks to Jeff and to Anne. I could do hours of shows with those two. I think the two of them and my buddy John Patrick of the Augusta Golf Show have interviewed more people in the world of not only golf but sports, and I could sit for hours and listen to stories from those three people in particular, and a lot of friends of mine, but thanks to the two of them, and thanks to all the guests for this season. It's been really phenomenal. This is the fourth year, I think, we've had Backspin Golf, and it's just been such a blessing to me. Also, our three partners along the way, Lexington Parks and Rec, the great golf courses, the access to those courses where I can take people and show them how wonderful they are, most especially Kearney Hill. They're all great, but to me, one of the truly great public golf courses in America is Kearney Hill. And Justin Mullinex and all the people over there, thank you so much for the great job you do. Edwin Watts Golf, it's been a great season with them. Just nice, nice people, wonderful deals, great club fitting, everything you want in a golf store. And Edwin Watts has been that for us, so thank you to them. And, of course, French Lick Resort and Brendan Sweeney and all the great people up there, too. There is no place better than that place as a resort. So close to us here, the two great hotels, and the three golf courses over there, most especially the Pete Dye and the Donald Ross courses. Thank you to all three of them for being along for the ride, and I'm pretty sure they'll be back in January with us. So until next time, sometime in January, thank you all for listening. That's a blessing to all of you that come up to me and tell me how much you enjoy the show. It means more than you could know. Sean, thank you to you, too, for all your help. You rock, dude. We'll see you in January. We got a lot of football on today. Three games. All right. See you in January. It's Backspin Golf right here on ESPN Sports Radio, 1300.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.